come with me into the tormented, haunted, half-lit night of the insane. This is my work. Let me lead you into it. Let me take you into the mind of a woman.
Hi, welcome to Beyond the Cabin in the Woods, a good ghoul's guide to horror. I'm your poltergeist, Kinsey.
I'm your poltergeist, Donna.
I'm your poltergeist, Mac.
And this week, we're talking Lestat. And we are discussing
Don't worry, it's not Queen of the Damned.
No. Calm down. Put the pitchfork away.
Don't delete the episode. Keep listening.
We're discussing the 1994 Neil Jordan version of Interview with a Vampire. For those of you who don't know what this is about, Max Nemesis at IMDb wants you to know: a vampire tells his epic life story, love, betrayal, loneliness, and hunger.
Also, it's like fan fiction, the movie. I know Anne Rice hated fan fiction, to a litigious level, but I get her reasoning for disliking fan fiction. Like, she has a very cogent theory behind it. Maybe not punish your fans for celebrating your work. But also, this story in particular, especially this presentation of the story, is about two guys who almost kiss for 2.5 hours.
Accurate.
In the book, they're doing far more, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
In this movie, like, if you were of a mind to write fan fiction, this is gasoline on the fire. Just
right. This is like pining to an 11. Right. An 11.
Three if you count Banderas.
We do.
Photogenic gentlemen.
Beautiful men.
Perpetually on the verge of kissing.
Yeah. Had you guys seen this before? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
I'm not sure if I've seen this before or not.
Oh, okay.
I feel like maybe I have, but I don't remember having seen it. Here's the thing. I don't like Anne Rice. I feel like I should. She feels like she should be right in my wheelhouse. I don't like Anne Rice. When I was in junior high, I tried 3 fucking times to read this book.
Okay.
2 times I couldn't finish it. And I finally muscled through it the 3rd time. I don't like this book. I don't like Tom Cruise. And I really side-eye Brad Pitt. Now, Banderas, I can get down with some Antonio Banderas.
Side note, the amount of makeup to make that dude look pale, can you imagine? Can you just imagine?
Right?
Like, hold on. Let me get the latex paint here.
Yeah, just... Banderas is ready.
He is tall, dark, and handsome.
The definition of, perhaps.
Right.
Look up tall, dark, and handsome in the dictionary. It's him from The Mask of Zorro. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't like Anne Rice. I don't like Interview with a Vampire. I don't like Tom Cruise. And I don't know about Brad Pitt. And
fair.
I don't like the book. I think I said that a couple of times. I don't like the book.
So the verdict is you do not like the movie.
I sat through the movie with full resting bitch face on.
Yeah.
Claudia is what I like about this movie.
Interesting.
Which is a hard thing to like because she's a little monster.
She is.
She's horrible.
Yeah.
She's not good. But
Kirsten Dunst is delightful.
Oh, yeah.
And she acts the part fantastically.
Which is not an easy thing for, I think she was 12.
Yeah, she was. She's a little girl. She was
very young when she played the part, and she played it fantastically. Yeah.
She hadn't done much. I think Ernest's... Was she in one of the Ernest movies? Am I remembering that right?
Anyway,
an episode of TNG, and that's like it. Mm-hmm. Like, she is very young and very green in this.
But most of the time when you see a child actor in a part, you're very aware that it's a child actor who's acting, and I really wasn't. Anyway, the point is, I didn't.
You don't like the movie. Okay.
I don't like the movie is what I'm working my way towards.
I spent
most of the movie going, I gotta watch this dumb movie.
I finally powered through the book only in the last several years. I don't care for the book. I think the book is very ponderous and self-indulgent and
boring.
A chore to get through. Yeah. I kind of like the movie though. Rice writes the screenplay, and it's sort of interesting that she is not precious about what's in the novel. Like, you would on spec see that novel, and then, oh, we're getting the novelist to write the screenplay, and you'd expect a 900-page miniseries to get delivered. But it's, for a 2.5-hour movie, it's relatively lean. It clips along at a nice pace. It doesn't wander too terribly much. So I'm impressed by her restraint in this instance. I kind of like Tom Cruise, I'm gonna admit, even with all the problems.
He does act the part well. I cannot for a
Yes.
moment deny that he plays the part well.
He plays the part well. But also just generally, like, you can talk about all the problems with Tom Cruise, but he loves making movies and being as interesting as possible in making those movies. So I admire that about him. Like, there are very few instances where I feel like Tom Cruise ever phones it in.
I'll give you, yeah, I'll absolutely co-sign off that.
He's still dangling from airplanes at the age of 60. I'm going to, without judgment, say Scientology may work for him. I don't think it works for everybody. It is the one Western religion that has a very firm stance on motion blurring on TVs, and I find that interesting. Beyond that, yes, it's all crazy talk, and he's short and crazy, and at best turns a blind eye to the abuse in the organization he supports. Brad Pitt has issues. I think both of his divorces were probably well earned. But again, also a guy who makes interesting choices in movies and has from the beginning. So all told, the whole package, I like this movie despite its source material. I even turned to Laura at one point. She was kind of checking in and out. It's one of those movies that I feel is better than the book.
I'll give you that. I never
Yeah.
failed to get through the movie.
Right.
Well, apparently I have watched it before because I just said I've never failed to get through the movie. So,
We're learning more as we go.
yes, yeah. I like this movie. Like, this is, I had the soundtrack. This is a soundtrack I remember going to sleep listening to quite a bit.
Explains a lot about you.
It does, doesn't it? There's the scene once again, learning things. But I read the book series. I think actually, Donna, I was like you. Like, I was in eighth grade, but I was bound and determined because, like, no one could tell me whose book it was because I found it at my nana's house, and somebody had left it there. And I was like, "Well, it's got vampire in the title, heck yeah!" And I'm gonna start reading it, and nobody was like, "I don't know who brought it. I don't know who." I was like, "Are you freaking kidding me? You don't know?" Okay, anyway, but no, I read the entire series, and so I do agree the first book is a slog to get through.
So the other books are tighter. Like, I might have a better time with them.
Yeah,
Might.
might. If you're wanting more of Lestat's motivation, especially in that first book, then the vampire Lestat will give you that. I'm more of a, I've realized that, and because of Anne Rice, I realized I like history. And so Queen of the Damned is like kind of like, here's the history of the vampires. Same thing with Mayfair witches. Here's the history of the witches. Like, I like the family genealogy I found fascinating. So granted, you don't get that to like the, you know, till you get to Queen of the Damned. I've seen, like, I went to the theaters when it came out. I was very excited to see it when it came out because I was like, there's a handful of books that helped me survive high school, and this series is one of them. Like, now, granted, I didn't read it as much as I read Heir to the Empire.
I was about to say, like, it feels like there's another book out there that's more
Oh, yeah.
foundational to your whole
Oh,
thing.
yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's another, you know, it's not in the same caliber. It's different things. But, you know, reading to survive situations, you know, we all have been there.
Sure.
So I read, you know, that entire series. Like I said, I started, it's probably about ninth, junior high. Which I feel like that's a good, like, Anne Rice jumping in on points. You know what I feel like you're when you're like
I think
discovering your re
people, yeah, people would be most susceptible to Anne Rice's whole thing if they're AFAB or identify as a female and are in the ninth grade. Yes.
So yeah, I always have a good time when I watch this movie. Like I said, it's one that as I was watching, I was like, I probably could have just done like n notes and then just looked at quotes that I liked, but I was never a Tom Cruise naysayer being cast as Lestat. I know there was a lot of Anne Rice fans when this came out that were, because I knew, as Matt kind of pointed it out, he wasn't going to phone it in. And he doesn't. Like, this is a film you can say, this is not Tom Cruise acting like Tom Cruise.
Right.
He's putting in the work.
You almost get the whole sense from a lot of the film that it's people auditioning for the next Batman movie. Like Tom Cruise is telegraphing as much as he is chewing scenery to the point where like, oh yeah, he would take the call for a Batman villain. And then you mentioned the soundtrack, the score written for this was Elliot Goldenthal, who started writing the scores for the Batman movie, starting with Forever. And I listen to that score, and I cannot hear the motifs in Batman Forever in there. So,
I did not know that. That's interesting.
yeah, it's 1994. It's Warner Brothers. Hey, who wants a job?
Right. I mean, yeah. Usually it's Hans Zimmer that's when they need a default composer. So the fact that him, it's like, oh, okay. And I do enjoy the Guns N' Roses cover of A Sympathy for the Devil. It's not my favorite
Right.
Rolling Stone song, but man, GNR can do a good cover.
It's so good that in my mind it's the original. Like every time I
Yes.
rewatch the movie, I'm thinking, oh, that's not quite right. And then you get to the credits and you're like, oh, it's Guns N' Roses. I guess I'll allow that, but I mean,
It has no right being that damn good.
Agreed.
But yeah, no, this is one of those performance from Cruise that he's not Tom Cruise acting. Like it almost to me feels like he knew he had something to prove, and that's what he's working with.
And you'll notice he doesn't do another movie like this later. He's not
No.
pigeonholing himself. I think eventually he started really enjoying making those Mission Impossible movies, and every movie he makes is a little bit of Mission Impossible movie after a certain point. But even Maverick, I feel like, is a Mission Impossible movie. But this is in that period. I mean, A Few Good Men, this, that sort of thing, where yeah, he's really reaching for something, and it's interesting to watch.
I agree. I agree. Speaking of when this came out here, to me, this is the very epitome of it actor 90s castings. Because you've got Cruise, you've got Brad Pitt, I mean, I think he, had just done Thelma and Louise. Of course, Christian Slater, like Antonio Banderas had just like, it's just like, it's that cusp of it.
I think Pitt had maybe just come off The River Runs Through
Maybe
It,
so.
and that was a big like, oh, look at this, or A
Yeah.
River Runs Through It, and that was a big like, hey, check this guy out movie.
Yeah. And like I said, Slater was already knocking on that door anyway, between Heathers, Pump Up the Volume, and all of
And
that.
of course he was River Phoenix was cast in the role and died only a couple of weeks before filming began, so he was a last minute addition.
Yeah. Well,
Christian Slater and River Phoenix were
Very
almost
similar points.
interchangeable
when River Phoenix was alive.
Young
So it
Harrison
was.
Ford's dead. Can we get young Jack Nicholson?
Well, that's another thing with this film that is fascinating is casting. Casting, like Daniel Day-Lewis was offered Lestat first and turned it down.
I think that's the good move on his part.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you approach Lestat as a method actor and with deep immersion
I'm
like
just
that.
really glad he didn't, because no. Can you imagine being on set?
And having to
Oh,
refer to him as Lestat the whole time.
he'd be
God.
insufferable. Insufferable. I'm not saying he wouldn't do a good performance, but he'd be insufferable.
He'd be the most Jared Leto he could possibly be.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm just horrified at the mere thought. Okay,
Another
let's.
possible alternate casting that I was reading about and did not know before yesterday, for Louis, Cher.
Oh,
It was
okay.
right on the cusp of happening. Anne Rice was a little worried that the state of homophobia being what it was in the early 90s, that she would not be able to go full bore with the story, and considered changing Louis to a woman. And Cher was not only in the lead, she was like very serious about taking it, and had even written a song that was going to be on the soundtrack that she ended up re releasing later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Louis would have been a woman in.
Right.
Yeah.
In that version, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel like that's.
I'm sure the Anne Rice fans would have, set their theaters on fire, for lack of
Oh,
a better
they did.
term.
They had to burn it down.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, I also, even when you watch this film, there's kind of sometimes parts you feel like Cruise and Pitt are kind of pulling back and make not being as. I mean, because, I mean, there's a lot of. Not. It's.
It's 2.5 hours about any two guys almost about to kiss. Like I
Yeah.
said at the top, that's what it is. And I say that with no judgment in my heart. I'm
Right.
sure that's entertaining to a lot of people, and I celebrate them in their entertainment.
Yeah.
Okay. So here, you have actually just hit on one of the things that really irks me about Anne Rice. And I've never read any of the Mayfair Witches, and maybe I would like her if I did read the Mayfair Witches, but I guess this is my little feminist corner. I'm going to have to
Okay.
draw a map of my little room, which corner is where. But the thing is, I get really annoyed with women authors who write about men because you know what? There are enough stories about men. God damn it. There are enough. And she writes so many stories about men. Okay.
I don't, I mean, there's definitely the male aspect of the Mayfair witches. There's, oh yeah, but there, yeah.
And worse than that, a lot of the times when she does write female characters, she writes them the way a man writes women characters badly. I have written a few, I have read a few of her books. I have
Yeah.
tried because again, I feel like I should like Anne Rice.
Right,
And
yeah.
there was one book I read of hers about a boy who was put into the church, and they ended up castrating him so he could be a singer. And he,
I know which one you're talking about, but I haven't read it because I want to say it was part of the Chronicle series because she kind of gets goes like it gets
it was
wild.
weird.
Yeah. Oh, she gets wild.
But they traveled with him and somebody else and this soprano, and I called the other person they traveled with a soprano because she never referred to this woman as anything but the little soprano, and I was like, God damn it, Anne Rice, do
Yeah.
better, do better.
But then she went all religious with her writing, so I don't think she did.
She did because she had a near-death experience. Once again, this is things that. That brain bug still lets me remember that. Yeah, no, basically, she was in a diabetic coma for so long, like several days. And that's when she was like, I'm not writing about vampires anymore. I'm going to write about Jesus. And so that's where that happened. And then
But still,
she
it was
like,
a weird turn for her.
it
It was.
was, it was, it
And
was.
then she had a gay son and didn't like the way the church treated her gay son and came back to vampires and witches.
Yeah,
So I kind of
exactly.
have mixed feelings about that. Like, I'm glad you came back, but
Yeah, she's an interesting author, and that's
it
a
was
dip.
okay for the church to teach everybody else's tr it was okay for the church to treat everybody else's children that way.
But not hers, not hers.
Okay.
But anyway, we have went into book corners in all three of our rooms.
So in her Jesus books are like Jesus and Judas perpetually about to kiss? Like I like is she staying on brand within a certain milieu?
Read them, so I was like,
Neither have I.
I can't answer that question for you.
Fair enough.
I don't know if there's a lot of pining, you know.
That's how she pictured it. Like, what if Jesus and Judas really, really wanted to kiss? I'm not gonna have them kiss because, I mean, obviously that's too much.
Yeah.
But
So last night, while I was talking with my friends, and I was like, I've got to get off voice chat because I've got to go watch this dumb movie. And they were like, what movie? And I was like, oh, Interview with a Vampire. And they were like, well, the series or the movie? And I was like, no, the one with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. And they were like, well, you should watch the series because it's very gay. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
well, okay, but have you seen the movie?
Oh, no, there's no like subtlety. They are down to clown. Like I'm here for it. Like, no, I will recommend the series. Like, if You have a
So
if
the
you like.
homoeroticism is not subtle in the series, is what you're
Oh
telling
no.
me.
Yeah, no, they ain't afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some time has passed and they're not hesitant.
Yeah, no, they are not. Basically, if Rice had been braver, like this is what.
Well, and that's an interesting thought because I mean, like Neil Jordan did the Crying Game right before this, so
Right.
he's not a stranger to confronting sexuality ahead of its time.
And that's why I feel like he was picked for this film.
Sure.
And also, you know, you've got, you know, like Stephen Ray, who was in that film. He is, you know, one of the castmates. Yeah, it's an interesting moment in pop culture.
But it's a big movie with big stars in the early 90s, so there is a ceiling on how gay they can go.
Right.
Because I could fully see not necessarily Cruz, Banderas's or Pitt saying, "I can't do a scene where I kiss a man." I could see their agents saying, "No, we can't do a scene where he's kissing a man."
Oh, see, I figured Cruise was the one that put on the brake since this is 90s, and there's always been that rumor about him that he's, and you know, whatever your journey is, this is not judgment, but he's been in the closet since the 80s. So,
But I also get the sense that Cruise isn't necessarily about hiding it. It's the Scientology handlers 5 feet behind him that are like, "Now
right.
listen, we
Because
all love the Mission Impossible movies, but no, he cannot kiss a man."
yeah.
Pitt and Banderas were this
Yes,
close.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
Cruise and Pitt never got near that close. They
No.
got close, but not nearly that close.
Right. Which that's kind of also, I had that thought of, you know, you kept seeing the thing on on his thumb to puncture veins so he wouldn't actually have to bite somebody's wrist. Like, do you have the one bite scene, you know, that turns Louie, but like it's kind of like, okay, we won't be as here. Let's just have him just that may be the Scientology handlers. But as you've been talking about Banderas, I was thought of, you know, as you saw during the credits that Stan Winston did the effects, that's actually why he was called in to make Banderas pale so that
Yeah.
he could be vampire pale.
It's a full prosthetic Banderas
Yeah.
that we're dealing with. He
And
actually never was on set. It was a puppet, pale Banderas. And he
yeah.
just did voice work.
Yeah.
Impressive work within that context, but.
Yeah. So that's it's not just Crocodile Tom Cruise. No. It's
Right. Yeah. I made Danny DeVito look like this. I can make Antonio Banderas look like that. Can we talk about my favorite scene in the movie?
absolutely.
Sure.
My favorite scene in the movie is where Louis returns to New Orleans and becomes a major cinephile, like a Michael Bolton level cinephile.
How did that make you feel?
Well, anytime I've seen it, I'm like, that's an excellent argument for vampirism. Like Lestat comes to me and is like, "You could live forever and we could drink and go about the country cavorting." I'm like, "You can see any movie for the rest of time. Okay, let's do this."
Mac has just told every vampire that listens to our podcast how
Right.
to get him.
Yeah, no, and I've been public about this. If you've got an offer of vampirism and I can still go to the movies, it's not a no, it's just I need to hear more. Other than that, it's a firm no, it's a
He
non-starter.
wants all the terms and conditions, but
Yes.
he's interested.
Yeah, it's not a non-starter. If we're talking about all movies for the rest of time, I can see them. But it's beautiful for a movie that's not about like, "Oh, movies, I'm so in love with movies." It's not about this little theater that the vampire, well, it is a little bit about the theater, but not a movie theater that the vampires go in and out of. You could have had a whole movie about how great it is to go to the movies. The movie almost stops for a couple of minutes and we just see this wonder that he has at it. And I'm like, that's amazing. It made me feel very close to Louis and sympathetic toward him, especially because he did better in the early 1800s, late 1700s than Thomas Jefferson did. The shit hit the fan for him. And what did he do? He freed his slaves. Tommy Jeffs, not so much.
Nope.
Yep. So, I mean,
On the other hand, when he freed his slaves, they still wanted to burn him alive.
I think they have all got strong arguments. Yeah, no,
Right. Like, I mean, besides the whole, you know, being a vampire of it all, but slavery. So,
right.
yeah.
They were in agreement about it. He wanted to burn himself alive, and they wanted to burn him alive. They were united in the cause of him becoming a vampire crispy chicken nugget. But
Yeah.
yeah.
I'm just saying, if you say to a bunch of slaves, you're free, go, and they say, great boss, let's burn you alive first.
Maybe slavery is bad. Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're,
Actually, let's burn alive the one person who can say that we're free
right.
first.
Burn the receipts. Get them.
There may be a problem.
You're not wrong. Yeah. But I applaud Louis in his love of cinema. I think he and I would get along, especially because there is a certain framework where he won't attack someone. He doesn't do anything to Malloy until like maybe right at the end. But like he's a peaceful vampire and just wants to go see movies. Leave Louis alone. It's only when people start messing with his shit that shit goes wrong. Leave Louis alone.
He's a whiny fuck. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a whiny, morose fuck.
But I'd rather hang out with him than almost any other character in the film.
I mean, yeah,
I'd
really
hang
don't...
out with Antonio Banderas, Armand.
That tracks.
I'd hang out with him for
that tracks
a but while.
That's the non-cinematic version of vampirism that he's offering. So I'm, yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, okay, so not to be this person, but in my book corner here. Yes, Armand is beautiful, but if you have a problem with how much information Lestat withholds from you and turning you, Armand is a whole galaxy of a different problem. That's okay, my issue.
I do want to emphasize that I said Antonio Banderas.
No, I know you did, and that's why I use my example of like if this is what you want, but yeah, Antonio Banderas, yeah.
More Desperado, Mask of Zorro, Banderas than this Banderas.
Yeah. Because we've had a lot of conversations about
vampires. We have vampires. Had a lot of
I'm anti-vampirism, but the selling package is, do you like movies? And I'm like, oh, interesting. Yes, tell me more.
Mac has signed up for their newsletter.
Yeah.
We might need to check his Google search history, or maybe not. No, we don't.
I've admitted to being open to vampirism and Scientology in this episode of the podcast for very similar and specific reasons. I'm not doing it. I'm not into like the more I know about it, obviously, you know, vampirism, Scientology, you know, both
bad
religious movements built on abuse. But what religious movement isn't?
True that.
Hinduism, Buddhism,
Western religions.
Okay.
All right. I'll give you
I'll revise too. Yes. Yeah. Eastern religions don't come from that place, but even with any kind of large organization, be it vampirism, Scientology, or any organized religion will have the aptitude for abuse in some cases. Cause you know, like the Dalai Lama is just some kid they found and said, hey, guess what? You're the Dalai Lama now. And that's a little weird. Like I like there's a spiritual component to it and he embraces it and that sort of thing. But also it's just weird. Like, hey, you 8-year-old kid, you're our guy now. Okay. I'm this many.
For the listeners, Mac held up fingers. besides religion, what were you talking about?
Louis being a whiny fuck.
Louis being a whiny fuck, but ultimately maybe a good hang. I don't know.
I mean, he could be if it's just movies that you guys are going to.
Yeah.
Then yeah, but
he seems like a pretty good conversationalist. I don't think he gets along with other vampires very well. That's when he's at his most whiny, when he's with his kind.
Louis just always is like, you're not listening to what I'm saying and why it's bad, and that's
yeah.
And I mean, I can respect that,
right? I think one of the things I suggested possibly for Rule was that the 1700s could have used psychoanalysis, and that could have saved Louis a lot of problems. If you're like, hey, I'm depressed about, you know, my mother and my wife and child dying, and like, okay, yeah, that's probably something you need therapy for. But in 1700s, it's just like, I don't know, drink your fortune away, and then just whoever wants to bite you, that's who's gonna bite you.
I mean, drink your fortune away. I mean, I know you keep talking about therapy, but I feel like it would just been a lot of cocaine use during that time. Which could be
the best wisdom of the time. He might maybe could have used a little cocaine. I mean, I'm not saying cocaine use is good. Wow, I am going off on some real stances here this week.
Some hard lines that you have.
Yeah.
Some hot takes.
Yeah.
This is some hot takes.
Tibetan Buddhism, not 100%. Cocaine, hear them out.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know, a couple grains of cocaine in that booze.
For an antidepressant quality, yes. It's
if it helps you, and it then I could, you know, as on this podcast, we're pro-medicine.
Yeah.
We're very pro-medicine. We also pro-science.
And that's the thing. Like, that would have been the best wisdom of the time. Give him some cocaine. And I'm like, okay, he didn't try that. And
obviously,
that's probably on him. But by, you know, the 1980s, when he's just lurking around movie theaters and searching for Christian Slaters, he could have seen, like, there were plenty of psychotherapists in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even a peak. The captain of the Starship Enterprise in the 80s had his shrink right there next to him.
True debt.
So, editing on this film is interesting. I feel like this was definitely a movie that was one version before it was first shown to an audience, and then, like, a preview audience.
Yeah.
And then got reformed fairly heavily before its wide release. There are several moments where characters arbitrarily have, like, a line looped in. Like, there's the shot where Louis and Claudia are going to the ship after they think they've killed Lestat. And you can hear Claudia saying, "Louis, the ship is leaving without us." And that feels like that was added in after, because some audience member in a preview audience says, "I don't understand why they're running for that boat." And they say, okay, we'll add something in there to do that. But I think the biggest example of that is that last scene. That last scene, if I recall, is not really anything from the book.
I'm trying to remember with that last scene.
I don't think it was. I've read it probably more recently. So
Yeah. Well, I think that I don't disagree that that last scene was an addition, because I think once Rice came out and being pro-Cruise, I think they were already had the wheels turning of doing the next movie. And I want to say, like, Cruise was actually down for it.
And I think Neil Jordan was even, like, covering in the possibility of it. Yeah.
And so I think they were just trying to do connective tissue.
Yeah. But it also maybe feels like the audience came out of that preview audience feeling down about the movie. Like, it ends on this such sad note. Like, can't we have one more scene with Cruise because he's funny and interesting?
Yeah.
And they say, well, what would that scene look like? I don't know. Is he in the car with Christian Slater? Maybe. Fine. I mean, does that make any sense? Not really. But
it really doesn't. But it worked because... Right. Yeah. I am so much in agreement with what Lestat said about, I'm so tired of listening to Louis whine.
Yeah.
That it actually...
It's an interesting criticism of the movie.
Yeah. Yes.
At the last moment. Like, Lestat is not a fan of the movie that you just watched.
I mean, it really did turn around my feeling on the movie. So, it worked. It did what it was supposed to do for me. I was like, yes, Lestat. I just suddenly became in agreement with Lestat, which is stunning. But
big
there
takes
you go.
This big takes this episode.
Big takes. Big.
Lestat was right. Tibetan Buddhism.
It's also, to me, that last scene, because one, the interview is a big part of the series going forward. That's why I think it was also connective tissue. Like, you need, I think his name's Daniel. I think
Daniel Malloy.
But also, Lestat criticizes, I think it's the second book, that he criticizes Louis and his version of events. And it's such a meta take of having this Lestat bitch about Louis whining. I that's why I feel like the last scene, yes, was tacked on, but I think it was connected tissue. We're doing this. We're doing the vampire Lestat.
But it's also fascinating that I think over time, Anne Rice has different feelings about her first book.
Oh, yeah. She absolutely does.
Like, she may be the leading critic of Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, a lot of us look back on our early writing and go, hey, why did I do that? Why did I make that choice?
Yeah. If you're not mortally ashamed of what you wrote 5 years ago, you haven't developed any.
No. And I think with this book, and I'm not sure if both of you know, I know it came from a place of her dealing with grief because she had just lost her daughter. That's why the character of Claudia was created,
Yeah.
and just the whole idea of like, what if she, the daughter that she lost could live forever?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
As much as the book is not to my taste, I never thought that she was coming from a dishonest place about it either.
Yeah, no.
Like Rice, don't like Rice, like Tom Cruise, I never felt she was phoning it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't do it with that much development of the world and the genealogy of all that.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of stuff I tend to like in storytelling, but you can't be lazy and go full Tolkien.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the reason that I realize that I enjoy a good world building and knowing like history, all of that. Like she's the reason that I was like, oh, I liked that in a book. Okay, Maculin, you have our. Oh no, I've got a rule. I'm sorry, I've got a rule. I think it's very concise, which is don't be an evildoer, because that's who doesn't really survive this film. You know that they get their sights set on.
Except Lestat is an evildoer.
Oh no, he
Yeah.
absolutely is. But whatever he's got to tell himself as he climbs into his coffin to go to sleep, I ain't mad at baby boy.
Yeah.
Whatever he's got to tell himself.
The addendum I suggested was don't be an evildoer, just go to the movies, which, Louis wasn't hurting anybody doing that.
I'm a little mad at Lestat.
Okay. Even
Okay.
though I have agreement with him at the end. I mean,
Right.
he and I found a common ground at the end.
Yeah.
I'm still a little mad at him.
Oh, he's done bad things.
Oh
Yeah.
yeah, I'm not defending him, and I'm very pro vampire in my stance.
We're not pro Lestat. It's just that,
Yeah.
sometimes he has a valid point. Just because he has a blonde
Like
wig and dances around like a maniac doesn't mean that he doesn't have insight into the human condition.
oh
Sure.
sure. I mean, and he's
Yeah.
reading thoughts, which this is my in book corner stuff that just The Dark Gift, like that whole thing is very fascinating to me, and that it just kind of, it depends on how many vampires your maker has made before and kind of how strong of a vampire you are. And so like, when Louis talks about, oh, I can't read their thoughts. Well, yeah, because Lestat made like three fucking vampires before you, dude. So that's why you don't get the good gifts.
I'm going to go on a wild tangent just out of nowhere. There's an
Not on this show,
author.
you're not. Go ahead.
There's an author named F. Paul Wilson who is he's a fantastic author, and he wrote a book called Midnight Mass. Now, this is not the book that the Mike Flanagan Midnight Mass is based off of, which is also fantastic. The Mike Flanagan Midnight Mass, also fantastic. This is an entirely different story, though it is also a vampire story. The F. Paul Wilson Midnight Mass is a vampire story that is fantastic. And I'm reminded of it because of what Kinsey just said, which is kind of that the vampire powers get weaker as you go down. It's like making a copy of a copy.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I'm reminded of it. But there is one of the most horrific scenes I've ever come across that is based across upon that comment. So there, tangent over. I
All right.
recommend that book highly.
Okay. Macula's got her quote, and which we all kind of we the one we landed on, we were consistent across the board. And it kind of goes back to what we had been talking about, like we hear it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, Lestat can't stop saying it. Like he's doing us all a favor. Don't be afraid. I'm going to give you the choice I never had. But did he, though?
I mean, speaking of somebody who has experienced blood loss, you don't really have a lot of brain power when you're bleeding out. So no, he's not really giving them much of a choice.
No.
When you're sitting there going, my brain's not working because it's not getting enough oxygen, you're not really experiencing a lot of decision-making power. So fuck you, Lestat. Fuck you.
I will
Fuck
say
you.
this. If it's Cruz's Lestat that's saying that speech to me, I'm like, I kind of want to pass. But if it's Sam Reed from the TV show's Lestat that is giving me that speech, I'm like, oh, would you please tell me more, please?
I'm interested.
I'm intrigued. I mean, I'm not a hard sell, but I'm really intrigued.
Also, I feel really horrible.
All right, Mac, you had our poll.
Would you have a vampire on your podcast? Very apropos for the movie and the format in which we speak.
Would we interview a vampire is what you're
Would
saying.
we interview a vampire? Yeah.
If it were on Zoom.
Oh.
Interesting. Would Zoom
Absolutely.
even work necessarily? Would they show up on camera?
Now let's do some science here.
Ooh, okay.
An old fashioned
some vampire
camera.
Science.
Vampire science. An old fashioned camera which used a mirror, I don't think they would. But digital cameras don't use a mirror.
No. But in theory it's the same basic principles of light and reflection and
I don't know that it is. Because the rule is that they don't cast a reflection. And an old fashioned camera uses a mirror. I don't know what's going on with a digital camera. I don't think there's a reflection in there. It's
I guess it's more similar to the animal eye in that it is lenses and projection more than. Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah. So if we could have them on Zoom where they can't at the end of the interview zoom across the room and kill me. Absolutely, I would. If we had to sit in the same room, I would be much more hesitant.
But it's not a no. I would have thought it would be a hard no.
Same here. Like,
well,
knowing Donna's stance on vampires in general, like I was expecting, like, nope.
But there would be some negotiation before I'd get in the same room. But you're right. It's not a hard no. I would have some scientific curiosity for that vampire.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
like, can you get an erection? Can you? Do you have to have recently fed?
That's your first question.
It is. Because you have to have blood pressure.
Yeah.
Do you have blood pressure?
You would think they would, because if they're feeding, they've got some blood supply of their own.
Yeah. I mean, I'm genuinely, that would be a scientific curiosity question. Genuinely.
Skimming Wikipedia, didn't I see that Lestat eventually impregnates a human woman in this book series?
I can't remember. I don't think he does, but I can't remember.
But there was like a big scientific effort to do it. Like they had to, you know.
That may have been after I stopped reading.
Yeah.
I know in later books he definitely has sex. So, absolutely I would have. I mean, I do like the idea of us doing over Zoom, but I'm sitting here giggling because none of us are vampires, and we like each other a lot, and we still just do it over Zoom. So, and there's no like safety reason on why, like, no, we can't. So,
it's
yeah,
true.
No, we.
We didn't used to either.
No, we didn't used to. So
we started doing this during COVID.
Yeah.
And then we all just decided, you know what? Why am I getting out of bed? That, of course, it's an hour drive for me. So
yeah,
and we record early in the morning. Yeah, like
yeah. So
my other podcasts will do evening stuff, and we record here. So yeah.
So yeah, no, it is definitely because I am pro vampire, as we know here. So yeah, the idea of actually get to talk to one, and you know, theoretically, then yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah, the Zoom thing, I think that's a no-brainer. Let's do it.
Yeah.
The issue is, if it's a live one, where is my podcast recording facility? It's in my house. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, I would be interested in what do they want to discuss? We don't know. It could be a lady vampire. Vampress, if you will. If they want to talk movies, hey.
Once again, Mac, you're telling them how they're going to get you. They can get you.
That's fine. But that's it. Like, there's not, like, movies, but also, like, do you like live concert venues? Like, no, I do not. So you get to step in. So, yes, I think I would. I might rent a third-party facility for the event. And are they interested in talking about things I'm interested in? Because if it's like, oh, the 1700s and I freed my slaves and I'm so sad. Like, oh, but I also saw Superman the movie. And you know what I think about it? That's where we're really getting into something.
I co-sign off on that. Yeah. I like it. But yeah, absolutely would have one on here. I say that as I actually have a Vampire Pops literally staring at me from my shelf as we're having this discussion. So, you know what? Actually, I got a couple vampire things because I got Drusilla looking over my laptop. So,
Drusilla would be a difficult podcast guest.
absolutely.
She's insane.
She's insane and not a great conversationalist.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I love her. I'm not like this is no judgments. I just don't think she would be good in that context.
Yeah, no, I she's crazy and I love her and no notes don't change.
So here's the addendum to the question: who would be your get in the vampire world?
Who would be my get in the vampire world?
I think Spike is my number one answer.
Oh, Spike's,
Oh, for
oh,
sure.
Spike, I can't compete with Spike. No,
Yeah.
none of us can.
Yeah, he would be a delight. He would be
Yeah.
interesting to talk to. He'd have perspective. He'd say surprising things. He would be funny.
Yeah.
Angel is every bit as whiny as Louie.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I couldn't
Oh,
do
he'd be
Angel.
dull as hell.
Yeah.
Drusilla would be hard to get her back on topic.
Yeah. I mean, I can feel Editor Billy's eye twitching at that idea of her being our guest.
Yeah.
See, now I can't get out of Buffy world because now I'm
Right.
going down. Well, Darla, no.
No, no.
No, can't trust Darla. No.
Yeah.
I feel
Harmony. Am I getting that name right?
Harmony would be good. She would be
For a
funny.
very particular kind of show.
She
Yeah.
would at least be entertaining. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Harmony would be funny.
Going out of the Buffy world, Dracula, I think, would be difficult to get a word in edgewise. He would pontificate too much.
Yeah.
Then again, you think about versions of Dracula, like the Gary Oldman version would be just too loud. He'd blow out the microphones.
Right.
Not unlike I did during our episode on 1992's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
And see, Lee feels like he would, like, you just can't trust him.
Yeah.
Like nothing, just you can't trust his Dracula. And then you're just kind of like,
True.
even on Zoom, you're like, I can't trust him. Like, I don't know what kind of powers he's going to have coming through.
And I think the Bela Lugosi Dracula would be difficult to draw out because he's a little circumspect. Like, not like with Drusilla, where she's just going off in 18 different directions and what the hell is this show anymore? Bram Stoker's trying to be like, I never drink wine. Okay, expand on that. No.
I had one, and it left me. Well, the Count from Sesame Street, he wouldn't be
Would be a
much fun
delight.
either. He would be
Oh,
a
I think he'd be a
delight.
delight. Yeah.
You'd just have a lot of fun. Like
Yeah.
he would be a lot of fun.
And a very
I
friendly vampire too. Like
yeah.
he seems warm and open and not threatening.
Yeah. I can't beat Spike as a
No.
guest. Like
Spike pound for
I
pound, he's the guy. Yeah.
Yeah, because he as all the because as I'm going through my vampire Rolodex and I'm like, nope, Spike's still number one.
Some of the what we do in the shadows people could be interesting.
Yes, yeah. Oh, Mac.
Yeah.
Yes,
Laszlo,
and
I would
Naja.
get along with Laszlo and Nadja having their own podcast would be their own that would be
Yeah,
a thing
no.
on its own. Even Nandor, I could get.
Nandor would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you couldn't, like, if we're going into the True Blood universe, like, Bill Compton would be another Louie that would
Yeah.
just. But now, Pam from True Blood, she could be a lot of fun. You know, she's kind of that sharp wit, like.
Anybody with a sharp wit would work. That's why Lestat would work, but there'd be a higher danger
Yeah.
quotient there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But yeah, no, Pam from True Blood, because she's pretty whip smart, and I mean, you're gonna have a little bit of danger, but not the level you would with like others. But yeah, no, I like also like Lazo and Naja.
There'd be danger with him. I think that's the thing about Spike is like he doesn't like certain parts of Spike's journey. You could
Yeah.
sit down with him. If it Chip Spike would be okay, Soul Spike would be okay because the danger would be low, but the interesting conversation would be still high. It doesn't diminish
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, even pre-Chip Spike, of course, he would definitely be an on Zoom Defo
Oh,
on
yeah.
Zoom. Even pre-chip Spike would be a fascinating conversation.
Sorry, I'm just giggling over here at the idea of Guillermo setting up Laszlo and Naja on Zoom to do the interview. So that's why I'm just like giggling to myself because it's like, it's not working, Guillermo.
Gizmo, this microphone is being a bitch.
Yeah. All right. Who wants to go first on Happy Place? I can. I don't mind.
Go for it.
All right. So on the 31st, I had my last treatment. And so now we're on to next steps and all of that. And that it was a huge milestone having my last treatment. And so, yeah, that is my happy place.
That was radiation
Yep. And chemo, both.
and chemo.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, I'll have,
fantastic.
I mean, I'm on a break now. But yeah, I'm not, going every day for that or taking, not having radiation every day and not doing chemo every day. But yeah, I'm on a break. And so, yeah, I got to the, I hit my, had my last day of that. I got to ring the bell, which was nice. And yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's very
So,
fantastic.
yeah, that is my happy place. And like I said, next steps, and we'll go from there. But I'm immensely positive of that, of the next steps.
Good.
Well,
So, yeah.
my happy place seems a little bland, but my
Like, I
birthday
wanted to
was.
let Kenzie go first too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's gonna set the tone. How
So,
we doing? Okay.
where I wasn't trying to set that tone. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put the bar there.
Yep. I'm just
No,
gonna.
we wanted you to.
We wanted
Okay.
you to. Last weekend was my birthday, and went out for dinner with some of my friends, and it was just
Nice.
delightful, and I'm just still happy about it.
Oh,
And we
good.
had a fantastic time, and it was wonderful, and I'm just still happy about it. That's it.
Good.
Good.
Good, good, good.
I'm curious as to how much context my happy place needs. Like, I don't think I'll share the whole thing on the podcast, not because there's some secret to it, but it's just that it may not have general interest. After several weeks, I've been working with an organization to archive their 50-year-old video library. Like, they have old ancient Sony U-matic tapes going back to the 70s and that sort of thing. But they had a player that worked, but it was hooked up to a CRT TV that had long since outlived its usefulness, and just the machinery wasn't there. And after several weeks of trial and error and a very unhelpful conversation with a gentleman at Video Revolution, I managed to get this 50-year-old monstrosity to talk into my MacBook. And I am making the past come alive, much like a vampire.
Your happy place is one on brand for you and this episode. So I love it. That's awesome, Mac. Well, you can find us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're Beyond the Cabin in the Woods. Our website and Blue Sky username is beyondthecabininthewoods.com. I am on Instagram, Blue Sky. Threads all as at Callista77.
I am only on Blue Sky at dragongoblin.com. There's no I in goblin.
That delights me so much every time I hear it, Donna, because it's like there's no I in team. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just imagining like a dungeon with all these like motivational posters for the goblins behind, and that is like one of them. So,
No,
there's no
I
I
am
in goblin.
goblin.
Yeah. Go!
As we all try our goblin voices,
Yeah.
I am currently on Blue Sky semi-actively. Whenever you listen to this in the future, I am on whatever social media platform is relevant to you and not directly supporting fascism. On those platforms, I'm going to be at Party Apocalypse or, underscore Party Apocalypse, something with Party Apocalypse. Go look for that future person in the utopia that I'm sure is to follow from this garbage fire of a decade. Like, honest to God, halfway through, I'm done with the 2020s. Anybody else? New Year's Eve 2029, we're going to be exercising a lot of demons. But partyapocalypse.com is here forever now. And it includes this podcast and other fine podcasts, including The Holodeck is Broken, with myself, Laura, Eris, and Aisha. We also have full runs of As the Myth Turns, Friendables, Two Friends Talking About Hannibal Lecter, Disorganized, Criminal Minds podcast, and The Fourth Wall, books, blogs, movie reviews, and nothing else. Movie reviews, the count is marching on. I think we're at about 940 now. This year, it will hit the big 1,000 at partyapocalypse.com. The end.
As always, thank you, Editor Billy, for all you do and making us sound great.
We love you, Billy.
Also, thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us if you aren't doing so already.
Mash that button. And don't read the Latin.
And live forever!
You know what horror is?